This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
There are so many reasons in the Delphi murders case to question what reality is, what's going on. We're talking with Bob Mata, defense attorney and host of the podcast Defense Diaries, about all of this as more and more documents have begun to come to light, depositions of the investigators, breaking down so many of the claims that were made, so many of the ways this was steered internally, one person saying this, another saying that, sometimes not seemingly knowing what the other one is saying. One of the big pieces in this case, Bob, as we continue to break it down, is some of the early testimony. Obviously, there is the whole, we accidentally taped over our DVR with old episodes of the Golden Girls or whatever they did when they taped over their DVR of interviews with early suspects. Like, damn, we needed more Blanche. But what we have here in some of these interviews and some of these depositions, what we're learning about, and we've known for quite some time, but makes zero sense to the public when they start paying attention to this, is someone like Brad Holder, who on his Facebook page is allegedly, I've seen it. Allegedly he has, it looks like people are acting out this murder scene. I don't know any other way to put it. Like, two girls laying on the ground with the sticks on them. You have his buddy Elvis Fields allegedly making this statement, "If my spit is found on the girls, would I still be in trouble?" And these sort of things, they seem like they might be of some sort of relevance to a murder investigation. What say you?
You'd think.
Yeah, I mean, to me.
First of all, who asks a question like that? I mean, is that something that you say when you're at lunch with your buddies? I mean, how do you even come up with a question like that?
It's even worse than that. It's like, so they had taken this Elvis Fields guy, and it's Kevin Murphy, who's, again, one of those three cops that was investigating this particular, potential lead in terms of Odinism. Paganism, and they take him in, they interview him. So, and Murphy's driving him back to his trailer park. Okay. And like, so Elvis Fields he's out of the car. Murph's like, "Okay, thanks, man. We'll be in touch." And, he starts walking away, and he turns around and he goes back to the car. So he's out of the vehicle. And that's when he says this thing. He says, "Hey, can I ask you a question?" He's like, "So if my spit is found on one of the girls, but I have an explanation of, am I good? Am I in trouble?"
What the hell?
I don't know. People wonder why I've just been like, my head's been exploding about this case for 2+ years. It's like, how do you discount that? I don't want to hear people saying, "Oh, well, Fields has a super low IQ." Yeah, I don't give a fuck. Like, that would explain how stupid he has to be in order to go up to a cop and ask him that stupid ass question. To me, that's a perfect explanation as to why he would have done that.
Why are you spitting on the body of a dead girl? And why is that like just a walk away moment?
I forgot. Hang on a second before I go.
Yeah. It's like, and beyond that, it's not just what he said to Kevin Murphy. It's what he said to his sisters. Like, right after the crimes took place, he goes home and he's like, "I'm finally a part of something. I'm finally a part. I've got brothers now. I'm like, I did this thing." And, he confesses to his sister, and his sister is so disturbed by it that she reaches out to law enforcement. She's like, "Well, my brother has basically confessed to being a part of these crimes." They bring her in. In order to give her a polygraph, the polygraph is to determine whether or not she is being truthful about what her brother said to her. And the polygraph comes back. And again, polygraphs are just tools, but law enforcement uses them in order to, be able to try to indicate if there's some kind of deception going on. And they found that she was being truthful. That her brother did in fact say this shit to her. So you compile that along with the thing that went on with Murphy, and I just don't see how you're able to ignore it. in such a way, you know? And they're like, oh, well, his phone was at the house. Well, his phone was off for 10 hours. You know, his alibi that he was out at this hospital with Ron Abramson is cannot be verified. Like everything that they say that they did to kind of clear these guys is all bullshit. Yeah. When you go back to Brad Holder, and you know, he's like, well, I was at work. Okay, well, so what? You know, you're at work until whatever, 4 o'clock or 2:30, sometime, I forget what the time is, but it's sometime in that time frame, right? And that doesn't mean that the girls weren't picked up by somebody else in that crew if they're involved. You know, yeah. you have to believe that the state's timeline is the correct timeline, and I just don't. I don't think that that's the correct. The concept, and I've been out to the trails, right? Mm-hmm. I went out there because I was there for all the trial. Yeah. So obviously, you know, I went out and spent quite a bit of time on the trails. And it's a very serene place. You know, now it's got that kind of haunted feeling, obviously, because we know what happened there. But, you know, I'm out there and I was out there with my wife and like she was taking a different path. And I walked down to the bridge. Okay. And now the way that it's currently situated is they finally closed it off in the sense that they built like a banister, like a railing that stops. So it leads you out to where you used to be able to walk out on the bridge if you like walked around the barricade that they had. That's how all the kids used to continually walk over that thing. And so I went out there, and Tony and Stacy, the thing that was so evident to me is that there you can hear everything out there. I was standing out there and there was no one else out there. Okay. And there was a small, I don't even know what it was. It sounded like I was standing right next to it. But up, if you look up to, and this is at the north end of the bridge. If you look up, there's like the kind of like a berm that goes up like from the north side where you could walk up. And then you're on the other side of Deer Creek. And that's how you would get down to Ron Logan's property without crossing the creek. So I'm looking up in that area because I can hear an animal moving around. Whether it's a squirrel or a deer, whether it's big or small, I don't know, but I hear it as clear as day. My point being that with the amount of people that were out there down in that area around the time that the state is claiming, for no one to have heard anything in terms of two girls being taken by gunpoint across a creek and then the homicide taking place, like, do you think that one of the girls, while the other one is being unalived, would just be sitting there quietly while the killer is slitting her throat?
I mean, because they didn't get killed there, probably.
Well, I mean, the concept that no one heard anything in terms
that's
of
insane. That type of crime. And you got to think of that. That's a very good point to make. I'm thinking of that right now because we're getting into fall and autumn and winter and all that. And there's a dramatic difference outside on a walking trail in
leaves
winter or summer. When you have all the leaves and the foliage is there, there's a lot of noise that's going on. When it's quiet and nothing's rustling in the trees, you can hear almost anything. You're exactly right. Yep. And this was a day like that. This was a setting like that where, yeah, you don't know if that's, I mean, sometimes a chipmunk sounds like it's a boar and you're like, oh God, it's just a chipmunk that's rustling around. But yes, the sound is a huge thing. And you're exactly right. You're going to control these two girls. You're going to murder them. And then somehow they're going to be like completely clean after the murders too, because that's naturally how that happens with no blood around. The whole thing doesn't make any sense. That's where it obviously makes a lot more sense that they were killed elsewhere and then their bodies were drugged back out there, probably by more than one person. But again, none of it, all these things, somehow they tried to fit that square peg into that round hole with Richard Allen, despite all of this. Were they just hoping that no one would ever pay attention to this and they could just kind of keep going? Is this just kind of how a lot of small town cases work, where eventually, like, most never end up paying attention to it, and you can just kind of shuffle them along? But now we're in a very different landscape. where there's gazillions of us out there that have nothing better to do than to check each other's work or check the work of small towns and their law enforcement and their handling of cases. And they're just, they weren't anticipating having their work checked.
I mean, they could have thought that initially, you know, they're like, oh, we're just this little small town in Indiana, rural Indiana. And, you know, but like they had to know in short order. Like once they decided to release the bridge guy, that little clip of the bridge guy and the picture, and once the national media picked up on it, and once, you know, they decided to do a podcast about it, they had to know that it was becoming a high profile case.
Yeah.
Pretty early on.
And why the bridge guy video too, the video they released was edited. The sound isn't in the right place.
Yeah, I was sitting at the trial, right? And I had been waiting like the rest of the world to watch these videos. And you knew that we were coming to that point in the trial, and McClelland talks about, okay, we're gonna play this video. I'm like, oh my God, we're finally gonna see this 43, 46 seconds, whatever it is. And so I'm sitting there like on the edge of my seat. You know, we're in a relatively small courtroom. There's one large monitor that they had kind of towards the window side of the courtroom. Okay. So you've got the jury box over to what would have been my right. And then this monitor over to the left, and I had pretty decent seats. I was like third row. So like, you know, so I'm sitting there and you're trying to take it all in, right? In, you know, this 40 seconds in time. And when I'm initially watching it, it didn't seem. And so when he says that he's going to show the video, he claims that he's showing the original video first, that the one that wasn't enhanced. Okay. So I'm sitting there watching it. And when I'm watching that the first time, I don't see Bridge Guy. Okay. Like when I'm watching it. Now, does that mean that he wasn't there? I don't know. I mean, it's like, clearly, at some point, the guy appears, but in that original video, I don't see him. Is it because I'm trying to look at everything and take everything? I don't know. It was the fastest 40 seconds of my life. Like when I walked out of the courtroom, because we took a break after it, I'm like, I was asking other people, I'm like, was that the full like 40 whatever seconds? And some people were like, nah, it couldn't have been. It was too fast. And some people were like, yeah, well, that was it. I was timing it. So I'm like, you know, but you're trying to look and hear everything that you, and hear everything that you can when you're watching it in that time. So I'm like, ah, oh, man, I didn't see the dude. Did you see the guy? And like various people were like, no, I didn't see him either. So I'm like, okay, that's not just me. Like, because I don't want people saying, oh, well, like Bob Mata thinks he's innocent, so he didn't say. No, like I just didn't see him. So the next video that they show is the enhanced. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in that video, you clearly see him. Now, I don't know what they did, because they didn't put on the kind of like foundational evidence that I would have expected to explain the process of what they did exactly to that video to enhance it in such a way that it looks so drastically different to me. So, and then they show a third version, which they say was enhanced and stabilized, which I, again, there was no real questioning by the defense in terms or any kind of foundation laid by the prosecution as to how this occurred. Like what process did you use in order to get to this? They said some shit, like you go back to the trial transcripts and see what he says. It's like the equivalent to nothing.
Well, you know, we stabilized it. So, you know, we held it real good. Like it was nothing.
Yeah.
It wasn't kind of the technical thing that you would hope to hear in terms of like how you were able to produce this video, which again, you know, the people that have all the serious doubts about this conviction, they look at those types of things and they're like, you know, that's why people are like, oh, well, you know, was it tampered with? You know, did it come from the actual phone? Where did this video, you know, like that creates all that kind of doubt when they're not putting forth the process in which they were able to get this thing looking the way that it did. So, you know, ultimately, you know, that video, man, is like just one of those things where I'll never understand how they were able to make it seem the way that it seemed in terms of kind of the way that, like, there was one portion of it where it seemed like from the original to where I'm watching the enhanced and stabilized thing, that, like, I can see, it's almost as if they were able to access, like, the back camera. Like, so, you know what I'm saying? Like, that they were able to access things that you weren't seeing on the original video, but that was being recorded by, like, I don't know, man. It just, it looks so different.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's extended, and the where the sound drops of the down the hill is not where it drops in that little snippet that they originally placed. The sound is different, and they made it so the sound would be at a different place, so it looks a lot more ominous. When I watched that video, one of the newer extended cuts of it, I don't get a real ominous feeling from the guy at all. Because the girls, if we watch it, it's they're trying to figure out. You're clearly talking about how to get underneath the bridge before the guy even gets there. Yeah. They're wanting to go down the hill. They are the ones that want to go down the hill. So they're kind of fumbling around. The guy gets close enough. If you see two kids and they're trying to figure out a path to get somewhere, and you know the path, I don't think it's insane to be like, down the hill. Like, it's kind of point. Like, the path's right there. That's kind of what I got out of it. If I saw that and I didn't know anything that happened, I would not have necessarily said, a murder took place immediately after this. It just doesn't have that sort of a vibe to it when presented in its full context. And if it was such a nefarious, scary video, then why the hell did we only see 3 seconds of it up until until after you got Richard Allen convicted?
Context is everything, right?
Yeah, and we look at the whole damn thing, and it's like, this is nothing.
Right.
Like, there's nothing to this.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's the lack of context in terms of putting out that little teeny clip is what made it so ominous.
Yep.
You don't have the entire video. And you know, for me, like, who the hell is Libby talking to? You know, in that portion of the video where she's like, you go down right here. You know, like, this is like, there's no path. Like, this is where you go. You know, like, who is she talking to? Kind of almost in a whisper. You know what I'm saying? It's like, to me, like, I just don't know if there's somebody else behind her, because we know that Abby's not to her at that point. You know, because then she swings the camera back around, and that's when you see Abby come to, like, run past her.
She's talking to herself, you know, with a camera and a mic. I mean, that's kind of what I got out of it. I felt like she was just kind of murmuring to herself, and there's a mic in front of her.
She's recording it, because that's what that generation does now. They document everything, and they narrate it.
Basically, narrating her life is kind of what I got out of it.
So it's possible. It's kind of TikTok culture, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was it TikTok culture in 2017, though?
True.
It was starting.
I don't think so. Yeah. I mean, it might have been Snapchat culture.
Yeah, I mean, people are narrating stuff. We certainly had YouTube. People are narrating things at that.
Yeah.
I didn't find that part weird. I found that to be just, she's making a video and kind of chatting to herself.
Yeah, but you're not taking into consideration. So if I'm to agree with your premise there, T, which I'm apt to do, but that also bolsters your claim that there didn't seem anything to be nefarious about the guy, because exactly. When she's doing that, right? Like like she would have presumably seen the guy at that point when she's turning around and filming that and saying, you know, this is the path that we go down, or whatever she says. It's something to that effect. So, you know, I mean, that would seem to indicate that if she is just continuing to kind of narrate, you know, this is where we're at, this is what we're doing, you know, this is the path that we would go down, then I think that supports your position that they weren't thinking anything of that guy in terms of him being a threat. You know, the other part of it that you just cannot explain, okay, which is the 207 picture, right, of Abby on the bridge that's presumably taken by Libby. However, that picture was never found on her phone, not in her picture cache, not in the Snapchat cache, nowhere. They couldn't find that phone. It came from the internet, and it's that picture of Abby with the entirety of the bridge behind her.
mm-hmm.
all the way to the south. You can see all the way to the end, and there's nobody there. So, you know, like I have always been of the mindset that this dude ended up walking from the north end past them and then turned around. And that, mm-hmm. that, because like, I don't know how you explain that that person just doesn't exist now. Cause I, like, if you're out there, I mean, there's some, like, I wish I could have gotten out onto the bridge cause I would have taken measurements. I really wanted to take measurements in terms of like what the distance between the railroad ties was, you know, but it was, it's a scary bridge to cross.
Yeah.
Like it's not the type of bridge that you're just walking, you know.
No, there's dangers. Bit. Yes.
Yes. It's a very, very scary proposition. And especially if you're, you know, the older you get in life, the scarier shit becomes. Like, especially a bridge that's 100+ feet off, you know, above a creek. Yeah. You know, like when you're across, like old people are gonna be like, oh shit, man, this is pretty terrifying.
Gone this far, this yeah. ain't worth it.
Yeah. Right. You know, so yeah. I don't know, man. It's like that picture of Abby on the bridge with nobody behind her in conjunction with the video, just it does not make sense to me in terms of what their theory is, and I'm talking about the state's theory of the case.
It would be a great setting for Robert Stack in his trench coat to be walking across the bridge on.
Nice.
And then all
that's
of a sudden
great
he trips,
visual.
And that's the end of Unsolved Mysteries forever.
Right?
It's like, oh, Robert Stack's gone. What are we looking at in the comments, Stacey, on some of this?
Lots of stuff. Our comment section today is absolutely on fire, and I want to thank everybody for their amazing comments. Scrolling back, somebody brought up, is it Greg Ferency?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was an interesting comment. I'm so sorry. I can't remember who said it because our comments are just blowing up today. It's way back there. But talking about that link as well, Greg Ferency died, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
He was murdered. Yeah.
Outside a courthouse?
A federal building. Yeah.
Okay. And forgive me if my memory is cloudy, but he could have testified to what he knew, right?
Well, of course. I mean, had she.
Do you think it was he was murdered. It was not a targeted shooting, but
well,
there's so many deaths around this case.
Whether or not it was targeted is hard to say. I don't know that. The problem is that Ferency, but you know, he's deceased. Rest in peace to Greg Ferency, who by all accounts was an excellent law enforcement officer. You know, but you still had Todd Click, and you had Kevin Murphy that would have been available to testify. They were all three working as a team together, you know, which is where this appeal, how much they're going to dive into the third party culprit defense not being allowed at trial. I'm hoping mm-hmm. that they're going to be diving into it pretty substantially. But, you know, I mean, like those two guys could have testified. They could have testified as to what Ferency had uncovered in his own investigation, you know, under the collective knowledge doctrine. So like that would have been able to come in,
okay.
Like, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like Ferency's stuff would have come in through either Click or Murphy, because they all were working as a team together in terms of their investigation. Like Click wrote, you know, kind of the Odin memo, you know, his little thing where mm-hmm. after they arrest Richard Allen, Todd Click is like, what the fuck just happened? And he's like sending McClelland an email saying, hey man, did you read that thing that I gave you? That 12 page investigation journal or memo that I prepared for you? Because I don't understand why you have this guy in custody when the evidence that we've been able to put together in terms of this other crew of people is way stronger. And I mean, so much so that Todd Click, who's a cop, goes and hires a lawyer to figure out, like, how do I deal with this prosecutor who I think is doing the wrong thing here? And, you know, so that's when this letter goes out to McClelland. And after Click, you know, talks to his lawyer and says, you know, how do I address this? What should I do with it? Because I think that they're fucking up. And, you know, from that point forward and right before trial, to follow on with the Todd Click story, you got Ferency, who's killed. And that's after this Odinism thing has been going on in terms of their investigation. So whether there's a connection or not, I have no idea. But, you know, right before trial, Todd Click, who had left law enforcement and was working for like CPS or some branch of Child Protective Services, is arrested, saying that he was fudging his records, like right before the trial, on some bullshit, saying that he was talking to parents or witnesses on cases that were to be investigated, but he didn't really go, you know, or didn't make the phone call, or, you know, so like some ticky tacky shit that they come out in order to dirty him up before trial in the event that they're going to allow the third party culprit stuff to come in, you know.
You're right. And I remember that. You know?
Yeah, dude. I mean, that shit's still pending for Todd Click. So, I mean, there was like an active, kind of an active, it seems to me, plan to dirty up everybody that was involved with that Odin side of it in order to be able to discredit it completely in the event that it would have come in at trial. And I mean, never forget that it was Judge Gull herself who told McClelland, hey, you know, Nick, you know, that whole third party culprit thing, you might want to go ahead and file a motion to try to bar that from being introduced. And McClelland's like, oh, yeah, that's a good idea. So it's like, yeah, but this is all the shit that's going to be brought out in the brief. And it's just, to me, you know, for the girls, for those families of the girls, you want this thing to have been done right the first time. Yes. And I've been saying it forever and ever and ever. It just wasn't. And, you know, I don't know what the appellate court will do. I don't know what will happen if that is denied once the post-conviction petition is filed and that investigation takes place. Because that, the direct appeal, just so people understand, only deals with the issues related directly to the pretrial and the trial itself. You don't bring in new evidence there. Typically, in a direct appeal, it can happen, but typically you don't hammer away at ineffective assistance of counsel in that particular brief on a direct appeal. But that doesn't mean that it won't. That doesn't mean that it won't happen, because it can. It's just usually you see that in post-conviction work.
Here's the Delphi, the bridge video, or one of them. Do we have, can we do sound on that, Todd?
Click, yeah, what I can do. Click the sound thing down there, T, in the lower right-hand corner. It's muted. I think
that.
There you go.
Guys. Hi.
Restart it. Here we go. Yeah.
See, this is the path.
I think she's talking to her. It's right there.
There's no path going there, so we have to go down here.
Pause it right there. Pause it right. So if you're to take Libby's words at face value, it sounds like they were already going down there.
Yeah, they're basically discussing mm-hmm. where the path is, where to go. Right,
before anybody says down the hill.
Yes, right, completely.
She's talking about, like, this is the path that we have to take to go down. Yeah. Like, if nobody, like, and so as we're about to hear, this is when this person says down, like, so, yeah, it's just, I don't know, dude, this case is insane to me.
It is.
It doesn't feel weird at all when this resumes, because it's just, if these two girls are kind of like flailing around, like, looking like they're anticipating to go down the hill, and you're walking by and they seem confused as to if this is a path or something, I would probably be like, oh yeah, down the hill, thinking nothing of it and continuing along my merry way. Let's play that last few seconds.
Guys. Hi.
There we go. It was just like, hi, down the hill. That's what I got out of it. Or, hey, guys, down the hill.
Yeah.
Nothing weird.
It doesn't seem strange. They just met somebody on the trail. They said hi. and then they continued about their business. It just doesn't feel like there's anything going on here.
Yeah, I mean, and there's people out there. Well, you know what I mean?
Riddle me this one. Why on earth is Bridge Guy the guy? What connects this man on the bridge to magically being a murderer?
Yep.
Where did we find all the Bridge Guy clothes soaked in blood that we go, oh, well, it must be Bridge Guy who did this because the clothes he was wearing are covered in blood. It doesn't exist. It's simply because this guy was in the proximity of a murder, so as many other people who were walking around in that park that day, any of them could be just as likely to have perpetrated this crime.
Yeah.
This idea that Bridge Guy is the guy, I've never understood. I just don't. How?
Yeah, I mean, to Stephon Curry's, that's a kidnapping when you pull a gun on kids and say, guys down the hill. Well, Stephon, I guess my pushback to you on that would be, how do you know he actually pulled a gun?
Yeah, we don't see it.
Because I completely reject, I can't remember who it was, if it was the cop that was listening to all the sound, one of
oh, yeah, someone says they heard the gun
Yeah, he says he heard
There's leaves crunching. I don't know how you can make out distinct sounds.
There's no way, but he said not only that the gun's racked, but he also said that he thinks that he heard her say, "Dat be a gun."
Yeah, because she's suddenly speaking that way. She's suddenly speaking at a totally different cadence than she has in any other time. Dat be a gun. Because come on, folks, common sense here. We don't even have a gun on video. We don't, the sound, because you heard a noise amongst a thousand other noises, well, that one must be a gun racking.
It could be a twig breaking.
And somehow this man who's on the bridge amongst many other people in that park that day, on the nice day that it was, must be the murderer because they happened to capture him on video.
I mean,
the dots don't connect.
Well, they don't, but I can see why law enforcement took it that way because it was the easiest thing to do.
Yeah, I mean,
they've got there. They get the phone. They get this video. They're like, "Oh shit, there's the guy." Like, I mean, you can see why law enforcement decided to tunnel vision on that dude being the guy, right? Because it was the easiest thing to do, and to them, it made the most sense.
It's quite a assumption, though. Too.
I mean, it is.
If those girls had taken more videos, they could have captured probably many more people. And I think any one of them would have been just as likely as being the person. Mm-hmm. I mean, or less likely. Because if you see the person that has a camera and they're videoing you, you think, I'm going to go kill them and leave their phone by them that they just taped me on.
Right. Like, no, place it under her.
Yeah, and place it under her body. It's not like you missed the phone and you saw her with the phone and she might be taping you. Yeah, let's go kill those two and leave the phone there.
I'm obviously with you. I'm getting ready for this appeal to, you know, the brief to get filed, man. To see
me
what
too. Me too.
And just, you know, go.
There's a lot. I mean, if anything, all these pieces, these depositions that have come out really just reconfirm just what a cluster this whole thing has been, that we've all known it to be, but even worse, I think, than we originally thought possible. Bob Mata, Defense Diaries, thank you so much for coming on and giving us your thoughts on this. And Buried, the John Wayne Gacy story, is that the
Inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation.
Inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. It is available also wherever you get podcasts. Search for it right now. Buried Inside the John Wayne Gacy investigation. Multi-parts into it in ways that you have never heard this case before. So if you've been into the Peacock series, you definitely want to check this one out as a great companion to it. It's going to take you so much deeper than anything you could ever get on the series, but definitely worth
Thanks,
checking out from Bob.
Thanks.
So do check that out. Until next time, for Bob, for Stacy, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.